Hey everyone, welcome back to the Foul Hour. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Ben Mottershead. If you haven't gone and listened to it already, I'd really suggest going back and listening to that episode. We talked about community and the amazing stuff that he does with activism as well. But looking at today's episode, you've already seen the title. I'm going to be talking about my tools of the trade and tools that I use every single day or very regularly, let's say once a week, from everything for writing through my computer process and my tools there, and also physical things that I have like notebooks and sketchbooks and bits of software I use too. So we're going to be going across the whole spectrum today, because if you're anything like me, you'll spend hours and hours and hours researching different bits of software or different ways of doing things just to make sure you're top of your game, and also to make sure what you're using is actually the best thing to use, or whether you need to figure out something else that's going to be better for your system. Now, before I get into the episode, I just want to make sure that you guys are aware of Skillshare. Now, Skillshare has been a sponsor of this show since pretty much the reboot of the start of the year. And the reason I keep talking about Skillshare is because, firstly, by using our code skl.sh/cfowlerdesign, or clicking the link down in the description, you can get 2 free months of Skillshare and unlimited classes on a stupidly massive array of topics from some of the world's leading experts in those areas. We're not just talking about Aaron Draplin for design, we're also talking about Gary Vaynerchuk, we're also talking about Paula Scher, from everything from design to accounting, social media, and back. You can learn it with Skillshare. So big thanks to Skillshare. We're starting off this show real bad today, aren't we? But it's okay, because Skillshare will probably be able to teach me languages as well. So maybe I'll be able to relearn English. But anyway, let's get on to the show so I can show you and tell you more about the tools I use on a daily basis. Okay, so we're going to start off with writing. Now, I'm a designer, and you might be thinking, Connor, why are you doing writing? Like, who are you? Why are you tippity-tapping away on a keyboard every day for 20 to 30 minutes just to write stuff out there? Well, writing's actually a really important skill to be able to communicate more effectively, but as I've proven by the intro and the garbled mess that it was, it's clearly not helping me be able to talk better. But the thing with writing is it will help you be able to more clearly and concisely get your thoughts onto paper, which is an absolute pain for most people anyway. And I know, even just since writing kind of a journal every day for 20 to 30 minutes, my writing and my speech and my communication skills have improved drastically, because now I can translate what is in my head onto paper. Now, what I use for writing is a currently free app, it's in beta at the moment, called Typora, but there is also an app called Ulysses for Mac, which is a more paid for option, I believe. I don't have a Mac, you'll find out why in a bit, but I use Typora at the moment. And again, the link for that will be down in the description so you guys can go and check all these things out, because it's the worst thing, like having to go and click through everything. But when I do writing, I use Typora. It supports Markdown, so you can do headers. It's great for blog posts. You can write tables and information. And if you're really nerdy, you can put in math calculations. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I highly doubt most of my listeners will be using it to write maths calculations. But that's what I use for writing. So we're going through like what I use on a daily basis from the morning. So I start off with those writing bits of software. And then if we're going to go through and maybe check some emails, I just use Gmail. I use Gmail because my main email is with the Google services, with the Google Business services. And also I use an app called Thunderbird, which is like an open source kind of Mozilla Firefox related app that is just a standard email client. I could use Outlook or something like that, but for now, Thunderbird and Gmail get me done with what I need to do. With Gmail, obviously, they've got loads of massive improvements in the last couple of years. So now it does things like predictive text. The search function's really good. It will also pull things out of your email and put it on your calendar if you've got a train ticket, for example. But if you're not a fan of Google, which I know some of you guys are, I'm not going to get in that topic. But I use Gmail for that because it's just super easy and I can get it anywhere, because that's a theme you'll notice with a lot of my selections, is that I want to be able to access it whether I'm on a Mac, whether I'm on a Windows machine, or whether I'm on my phone, because I cannot handle and cannot deal with things that are like iPhone specific. Oh, you can only get this to-do app, this to-do list app on iPhone. Well, that's flipping useless, because I'm out and about all the time, or I'm at my computer. So you'll notice a kind of a running theme of stuff needs to be suitable for multiple platforms at the same time. Now, when it comes to productivity, so we've just done writing an email. Actually, yeah, before we go through to productivity, let's go back to designing. Now, you can probably guess what I'm going to say for this, but I use Adobe Illustrator for all of my vector-based work, use Photoshop for Photoshop stuff, and then also use InDesign for anything related to publication as well. So I'm a bit kind of connected to the Adobe Creative Suite at the moment, which for most of us is probably the industry standard. It's what most people are using. Some people are using things like CorelDRAW, but for the vast majority of people, we're still just using the Adobe software. Now, you've probably heard as well of things like Affinity Designer or Affinity, what's it called? I can't remember, Affinity Paint, it's not called Paint, but Affinity Designer for something like iPad or for Windows, where you basically pay once and you get that software until they do a major upgrade, which I don't think they've actually done since I bought it kind of a year ago and haven't touched it. So clearly that's really good. They probably don't do updates that often. Well, they do updates often, but they don't do a major release every 6 months, for example. So you're not going to be hit with that money every single year. And Affinity is by definitely a competitor against Adobe now. They've not just got Affinity Designer for Illustrator, they've got their Photoshop equivalent and they've got their InDesign equivalent, which I think has just been released out of beta. So all of those things, if you really want to kind of avoid using Adobe and get away from those subscription models, that's my plan for next year. I want 2020 to be the year I switch over to Affinity because I'm kind of tired of having to pay so much every single month for Adobe. But then it comes down to things like, well, I'm not just using Adobe Illustrator, I'm also using things like their Creative Cloud software, I'm using the color palette generating tools, I'm using things like Adobe Audition or Adobe After Effects. And it's like, I don't want to have to replace all of these and learn all these new softwares. But potentially, if you're looking for something that you don't have to pay for every month, going through with Affinity Designer instead of Adobe Illustrator would be a better option for you. But that's kind of the standard. I didn't really want to touch too much on the designing stuff because everybody knows what everybody uses at this point. We pretty much all use Adobe or use something that's slightly equivalent to it. There are open source ones out there and things like that too. You could use, I think it's a software called Inkscape. But overall, I don't know very much about those because I've literally only ever used Illustrator. I started off using Illustrator on the library computers when I was in college. And then I just started getting it on my laptop and working up from there. So I've kind of always had it and used it since it was, I used it for so long at this point that the default color scheme is like a gray with a gray background and stuff. But I remember when it was just all white, it was all the icons were really hideous as well. But moving through away from the designing stuff, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this whole podcast, this whole episode kind of spun around, was the idea of productivity. And it's a topic that I am kind of mildly obsessed with, which is probably not a good thing because my constant obsession with refining productivity and refining strategies sometimes means that nothing gets done at all. But I mean, that's just kind of the curse that comes with being a little bit of a perfectionist. I think you constantly wanting to refine and update and adapt your process to make it even 5% better. But I love looking at productivity stuff. I follow a YouTube channel called Keep Productive, and I just want to make sure that I'm on top of stuff and I'm not getting distracted. So one of the things I've been doing recently for productivity, which is not really an app, it's on everybody's phone. You could use just an egg timer if you really wanted, but I use just a timer. I use a timer and I use an app called Rescue Time, which I've mentioned before actually on a variety of different shows and Twitter and things. But Rescue Time in particular is really handy because it just works in the background. So you have it on your phone and you have it on your desktop just installed. You don't really have to touch it. You make an account, sign up, and every single week it will send you a report of what you've been viewing, what websites you've been on, how long you've been using certain apps for. Maybe you're addicted to playing Pokemon Go or something like that, and it will tell you exactly how long you've spent on that app in that week, which in some cases, if you're watching like 50 hours of Netflix a week for some unknown reason, then it will tell you and you can look at this graph and go, ah, shit, I should probably dial that back a bit and look into putting more time and more effort into software and programs that are actually productive. Now, some people will be like, yeah, I can't handle that. I don't like the idea of something tracking everything that I do. And it doesn't track everything that you do. It doesn't track it down to like the specific web pages you were on, but it will do it to different apps or to different web home bases. So if you spend all day on Twitter, it will just say you've spent 9 hours on Twitter today. You need to chill. But it's a good way to keep track of things. And I also just use my standard timer on my phone to track how long tasks take. For example, I know now that it takes me about an hour and a half to 2 hours to do a podcast. By the time we've had the guest on the show, I've recorded it, I've edited it down, and I have written and scheduled and created the cover images for it. It takes about 2 hours. But every single time I do it, it gets a little bit faster. And by tracking how long things take, you can improve those processes and change them. But what else do I use for productivity other than just a timer? Because, I mean, I'm not a complete robot. Lydia would say that I am. My girlfriend would say that I am. But she's not here right now. So we're going to keep talking about the other software that I use, which is things like another great one that I have for if you removing distractions, which is obviously a big problem in today's world because we are all attached to our phones so much, that I use an app and a Firefox / Chrome extension just called Block Sight, I believe. It's not anything particularly fancy, but all it does is you punch in a bunch of websites you don't want to visit or you want to set certain time limits for how long you're on them or when you can access them, and it will just do it automatically. And the first thing that it suggests to block is Facebook. So it literally the placeholder for hey guys, you want to block a website, and the placeholder is facebook.com, which is all that I use it for at the moment. I just use it to block Facebook and any other sites I find myself being on too much that are too distracting. I will block them in there as well. And it's just a great way to, it just cancels them. So you just go to load the web page and it just loads a blank screen. And it's like, ah, I remember why I didn't do this now, even if you're just instinctively punching that in. Then looking at things like task management and to-do apps and project management, I am actually in the process of updating my system at the moment. But one of the things that I am absolutely obsessed with software-wise is an app called Notion. Now, Notion I found to be a great place for building your own wikis, building an idea structure, writing down instructions or processes, and generally a great place to just stick ideas and notes and stuff like that. But unfortunately, I've been trying to use it as kind of a to-do app and a project management app, and I don't think it's very good for project management at the moment. And one of the reasons I say that and why my personal suggestion is not to use Notion for project management is because the mobile app is absolutely rubbish. It's just currently, I know they're not focused, the developers aren't focusing on the app version at the moment, but the app is so unusable at the moment because it's basically just a rewrapped version of the website, of the desktop application, that navigating it is an absolute pain. So as I said, I'm in the midst of changing my process for my productivity software and my task management software, but Notion at the moment for me is a place for things like shopping lists occasionally and some light task management, but it's mainly a place for me to have things like reference folders, wikis, instructions, processes, writing ideas if I want to get an idea down, but often those things will be placed in other places too. So Notion is an amazingly capable piece of software, but right now I'm still figuring out exactly how to do it. And then comparing that, as I mentioned, like project management and task management, I've been on a hunt recently for the best type of software to use for that. And my recommendations to you guys, which I'm going to be testing and trialing and using, are Todoist, TaskAid, and Microsoft To-Do. Now, everyone has different requirements when it comes to task management and project management work, but I think that Todoist and Microsoft To-Do are probably the best ones to go and look at right now. Todoist at this point is bloody ancient, but it's not ancient. It's an old piece of software, but it's continuously updated because so many people use it. You pay monthly for the software, and it comes with some really great features. Like you don't even have to punch in when you want something to be done on a specific day. You just write in, do shopping on Tuesday the 7th at 10 a.m. and it will pick up Tuesday the 7th at 10 a.m. and put it on your calendar for you automatically. So those types of things are really helpful particularly if you don't have very much time or you want to get things and ideas down really quickly. And Microsoft To Do doesn't quite have the same features, but it's completely free. And I believe Microsoft have said it will be completely free forever. And Microsoft To Do was based off of the best parts of Wunderlist, which they acquired and purchased and did all that kind of stuff. They just bought it and stripped it of its all good bits. But Microsoft To Do looks really good, and it's one I'm going to be looking at as well, because as I mentioned about the design software, I'm not a massive fan of paying for things every single month. I'd rather just pay a larger fee up front for a year and then just be done with it, because often monthly subscriptions are extremely overpriced for what they actually are. So I try and avoid them as much as I can. But Notion for wikis and instructions, Todoist from, or Microsoft To Do for project management and tasks, is exactly where I would be looking to plan out your design projects, but also to write instructions about how you run a process. So if you have your logo design process, for example, you might want to write all of that down just so you've got it on paper somewhere. So when your client comes to you, or you need to explain it to somebody, or even you just want to check back and reference what you've done last time to make sure you're on the right path to get the right results, then you have it written down, and Notion's a great way to do that. Then finally, when it comes to productivity, I wanted to talk about backups and saving files in the cloud or in other places, just saving files in general. Now, I use two different services for backups. Actually, no, three. I use three, but two of them are cloud-based. So I use Backblaze, which I will put my referral link, which I think gets you guys a free month, down in the description. But Backblaze backs up pretty much every single file on your computer. It will just pick all your hard drives, and you pick what file types you want to go or exclude, and it just uploads them all. It took me, I think, 20 days on my first attempt at loading everything up. I just had to let it run every time I was on the computer to upload all the files. But when it's done all of that, you can just sit back knowing that all of your stuff is really nicely secure with all their secure servers and software, and you can access it anywhere. They've got a great mobile app, you can access it on the desktop, and there is unlimited storage space. So under one account, I have not just my main PC, but I have a secondary license for my laptop as well. But the best thing about Backblaze is that you can just pull a file out of their software. So it's not just secured up there and you can't touch it. So what happens is you log in, and then you can go into your file system. So you can see what your file system would be on that computer, open up a file that you need, download it, and use it wherever. So they talk about things like people having presentations, their USB drive has got corrupted and they need to access that file, but they're away from home. So rather than it, obviously they've lost it on their flash drive, so they now go to Backblaze and just download it immediately, because it's exactly the same copy as what they have at home, which is great. And it does it automatically in the background. It doesn't take up very much bandwidth, and it's a really fabulous tool. And then when it comes to stuff that I need more immediately, or stuff I'm more likely to share with other people, I'll use things like Google Drive, because again, I'm already signed up to Google. I'm already logged in with Gmail and all that type of stuff. So Google Drive was just the easiest option. And I do use Dropbox occasionally, but that's more for client stuff if the client uses Dropbox. So I have an account with them, but I don't particularly use it. Google Drive is definitely my preferred. Although if I could use Backblaze for everything, I probably would. Then moving away from cloud software and looking at what I use to back stuff up just physically and like on desktop software. I think it's an old Microsoft piece of software called SyncToy. Now that it doesn't really sound particularly like like what's going on here, but I was looking for, before I moved to London, I was looking for a software that could sync my main desktop's computer hard drives with an external hard drive. And now I don't just mean back it up. I don't just mean, oh yeah, let's just copy those files across and then have to copy them back. No. I wanted one piece of software where I could push one button. It would notice the differences between the main desktop hard drive and my external hard drive and make sure they matched. So for example, if I go on the road and I take my external hard drive with me and my laptop, I can make a bunch of design files on my laptop, save them to the external hard drive, come home, plug my external hard drive into my main desktop computer, and then push one button and it updates both sides. So what happens is everything that's on my external drive is now also on my main desktop, which makes things super, super, super convenient because I don't even have to think about it. It's just mirroring the hard drives on both sides. So even if you do something like change a file name or change the name of a folder, or maybe you update the way your folders are done, it will do all of that as well. It's not just files. It will update absolutely everything on those two disks to make sure that they match based on whatever's new, based on whatever's been overwritten. And it's honestly, it took a little bit to set up. It took a little time, bit of time to set up because you have to kind of dig around in the archives of Microsoft's old utility software. But when you've got it set up and going, it just works beautifully. I have never had a problem with it. And I cannot imagine what I would do without it at this point, because although having Backblaze with automatic backup and stuff is great, it doesn't allow me to access my files just immediately. Whereas using SyncToy, I know that I'm not going to lose any files ever between different hard drives because I've set it up so they sync together. And it also means I have a second copy of everything physically, which is also a good thing to do. You should have a physical backup copy and a cloud backup copy. But let's move away from that because that's all the productivity software I use. But I'm now going to go into like the physical tools. I'm going to blitz through some of these because I'm going to be making a post about this later in the week or later on anyway. So when it comes to physical tools, there are two different things I'd recommend. I'd make sure you have a decent pencil case. Make sure you have some decent pencils. Now, I use a Staedtler mechanical pencil because I'm a snob. No, it's not true. But maybe it is a little. But I like using a mechanical pencil because I like having the weightier feel of the metal pencil. And also, I kind of prefer having a bit more control over the leads that I put in, or the graphite leads that I put into the pencil, so I can hot swap them and change them around and things like that very easily and very quickly. And it means I only have to carry one pencil around. I don't have to carry around like a pack of 10 different pencils just to use a different type of pencil weight. Then I also use Dot Grid sketchbooks. Now you hear me talk about these a lot, and there's obviously some designers think that Dot Grids are really bad, some think really good, like you can use whatever you want. But the ones that I use, there's lots of talk about using the ones from Moleskine and other paper companies like that. And I'm like, I've tried all of them and Moleskines are so overpriced for the money. Like, it's a flipping sketchbook. Just put your sketches down on some paper and be done with it. Like, come on, guys. Like, it doesn't need to be some crazy, beautifully thick weighted paper if you're just doing pencil or biro sketches like the majority of designers are. I mean, if you're doing watercolor painting in those books, or maybe you're using some heavy ink, then you need to actually get thicker paper. So Moleskines are probably more appropriate. But when you're just doing pencil sketches and maybe a couple biro sketches here and there, just using a very simple, easy, plain dot grid sketchbook is the way to go. And the ones that I get are called Dot Grid Design Books. But the website that you get them from is thedotgrid.com. That's thedotgrid.com. Now, these just get shipped from Amazon, I believe. I think they're just fulfilled by, yeah, in the back of this book, it says printed in Great Britain by Amazon. So it's just a paperback book, basically, and it's just printed by Amazon. It's just done on demand. So the paper is not incredible, but it's good enough, and they're a reasonable price, and I get them in bulk. I just buy like 5 or 6 of them at a time, and it lasts me for ages. And they're a good size as well. They're like A5 size. They're a good size to put in your backpack and things like that. But then if you want something a bit smaller that probably goes inside your pencil case, I use Field Notes. Now, I think Field Notes are quite expensive for what they are generally, but that's the case of paying for something that is beautifully made, is designed nicely, and is also of that size and coming from the US. That's the other thing to remember, is that when I buy Field Notes, they're more expensive than in the US because they've had to come through UK tax and all that nonsense. So I have Field Notes, but I don't use them very often. I'll typically only use Field Notes if I can't or don't have my big sketchbook on me. I just keep one Field Note sketchbook in my pencil case because my pencil case is small enough that I can actually fit, big enough to fit one of those in, but small enough to still go in my pocket. So it means I'm not actually losing out on anything in particular. So moving on from those physical tools, because they get kind of boring. I mean, we all just need a pencil, really. At the end of the day, maybe you want some colored felt tips, but mostly you'll just want pencils and some some ways to get things down on paper pretty easily. The next thing that I want to talk about is social media and social media content planning, because I've tried so many different softwares over the years and I keep coming back round to different ones, and I'm finding very quickly that all of these different scheduling apps are kind of all falling at the wayside because the main social platforms themselves are actually starting to make things themselves now. And it's I've been using social media and running pages, guys, since before Facebook had adverts. Well, that's not true. Before Facebook had page adverts. So before they introduced the promote your post button, I was running Facebook pages. And I saw my Facebook page that I had, which was for a clothing line, go from, I think it was 75% organic reach, down to 50, down to 25, down to 10, down to 5%, down to 2%, and then down to 1%. And ultimately it killed my page because I couldn't afford to do the promoted posts. And obviously Facebook didn't really care. So I had to figure out other stuff and I had to figure out other places and I had to figure out other software to use. So I've been using scheduling software for a long, long time on social media. And the one that I'm using at the moment, which I can recommend the most, is Buffer. But at the same time, I'm literally running into problems with Buffer right now that they can't solve, which I've confirmed with the people who work at Buffer, because the API systems they use, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, only give them, and LinkedIn, only give them so many bits of information and only so many rules they can actually abide by. So whilst Buffer's a great way to do scheduling, it's really easy to lay things out, it's really easy to set timetables, it's really easy to see how well your posts have done. The issue I'm finding with it is things like, what was it? It was on LinkedIn. So on LinkedIn, you can post in their like 4x3 or 16x9 format, but if you post a square image, it blows it up really big and it basically wraps your post to the size of the image. But if you use Buffer and you schedule the post in advance, it always compresses that image to fit down within a 16x9 or the 4x3 format, whatever their standard format is. And I've checked with Buffer and they said there's nothing we can do about it, I'm afraid. Native posting seems to work and blow the images up as they should be, but when we use the scheduling API, it automatically shrinks it down to that size, which is no good, because the reason I've made a square post to share on LinkedIn is because I want it to be square. I don't want it to be shrunk down and compressed just for the sake of it. So I'm kind of shitting on Buffer a little bit here, but other than the tiny things that I'm noticing, for most people, Buffer would be an amazing tool to use. And they allow you to schedule up to, I think it's 10 things at once on their free plan. So if you want to give it a go and see how it goes, I would definitely recommend that. If you want to look at something specifically for, say, Instagram, I'd look at a software called Later. I think it's later.com. Their software is really good. But I just needed something at the time that fitted multiple platforms. But then we get on to what I'm actually going to be using in the future, which is using just Facebook Creator Studio and using TweetDeck. People have been using TweetDeck since for years and years and years, long before TweetDeck was even owned by Twitter. Obviously, Twitter has now purchased TweetDeck, and social media managers all around the world use TweetDeck to schedule and watch multiple lists of tweets all at the same time. And TweetDeck's great. I've not actually used it too much, but I know lots of people who do use TweetDeck all the time. I know people who have entire monitors just dedicated to having TweetDeck. And then you can also schedule tweets with it. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be using it to schedule my tweets. I'll be using Facebook Creator Studio to schedule all of my IG, Instagram and IGTV posts, because Facebook Creator Studio allows you to schedule and automatically post IGTV videos. And it also allows you to schedule and automatically post every other piece of content as well, except for stories. They're not doing stories yet. I think they probably will at some point, but for normal posts, for carousel posts, for video posts, and for IGTV posts, you can schedule it and post it all in advance, and it does it automatically, which is incredible. So, and it's free. Providing you have, I think it's, if you have an Instagram business account, it's free and you can use it however you want, which is amazing. Like, why would you use anything else? And it works really well. The only downside to Facebook Creator Studio is you can't edit something when you've scheduled it. So if you make a mistake, you'll have to just re-upload it and schedule it again, which is a real pain if you do something like an IGTV video where it takes 10 minutes to upload. Or even longer than that, to be honest, because some internets are just awful. But then that's what I use for social. So I'd recommend Buffer if you're just getting started. But if you're a bit more of kind of a hardcore user and want to schedule everything in advance, I'd recommend Facebook Creator Studio and TweetDeck. And then for LinkedIn, if you use LinkedIn, just post stuff natively in LinkedIn. Just like set a timer or an alarm on your phone and just post it natively, because LinkedIn's API is just clearly a bit of a mess at the moment, or no one has like a super updated version. So even using Buffer, as much as I'd love to, and it has worked really, really well up to now, it's just not doing what I want it to do. So I'm going to have to change that. But the kind of last three sections I wanted to touch on were what my technical computer setup is and what I use for the podcast, and then also what I use for learning. So people have asked me in the past, where are the best places to go and learn things? How do you learn things? How do you become self-taught, et cetera, et cetera? And I can go through some of those at the end of the show. But before we get to that, I want to touch on my computer setup, because I get probably a message once a month for people saying, how do I, or what type of computer or laptop should I have? And this is a very difficult question to answer, because obviously everybody has a very different budget for how much they can spend. Everyone has different, depending on where you live, have access to different brands and different computer companies. Obviously, if you're in America, like the standard of design laptop is going to always be a MacBook or an iMac or something like that. But there are other brands out there, and there are other brands worth checking out as well. So I grew up in a Mac household. So my mum, she had one of the early iMacs, the ones with the translucent blue kind of fishbowl look. So that was my first computer when I was growing up. It wasn't mine, but the family computer was that. And it's been a Mac household pretty much up until I was about 18. I broke my MacBook, one of the old plastic unibody ones, by treading on the hard drive, and it just completely shattered it. After that, the battery then expanded, and like it needs some heavy stuff doing to it. But the difficulty with Macs were that they just have become so expensive. For what they are extremely overpriced. And you're basically paying for the brand and paying for the Mac OS at this point, which is fine. If you prefer Mac OS, I mean, go for it. But things that I want in a computer are very different to what you get with a MacBook or even with an iMac. I like to be able to tinker. I like to be able to adjust things. I like to be able to upgrade things. And unfortunately, with MacBooks, you just can't do that. And even with the most recent fully spec'd MacBook came in at about $5,000, which is insane for a laptop, especially one with such low specs and such low capabilities. But if you prefer Mac OS, then go for that. But what I use is a Razer Stealth 2019 laptop with the graphics card upgrade. So it has an NVIDIA graphics card built in rather than just a standard Intel one. And it's got 16 gigabytes of RAM instead of 8 gigabytes, which is generally the standard on most baseline laptops. But we all know if you have an 8 gigabyte RAM in your laptop, it's just not going to run most of the Adobe software very, very well at all. The minimum requirements, Adobe Illustrator and stuff says, I think it's 8 gigabytes RAM, but it's not 8 gigabytes of RAM. It definitely needs more, because 8 gigabytes at the minimum is, yeah, the software functions, but you're not going to actually be able to use it to its full capacity. It's going to be slow, it's going to be laggy, it's going to be really choppy. But with 16 gigs, you're plain sailing. So as a machine to use on the go, I have the Razer Stealth, which is quite a small screen laptop. I think it's, 13-inch laptop, so it's quite a small laptop. But I just plug it into an external monitor, whether I'm at a friend's house, whether I'm just at home, which is what I'm recording this on now. I have it plugged into an external monitor, and it's perfectly fine. The only time it gets a little choppy is, and a little bit slow down, is when I'm using OBS and recording my screen. So if I'm recording what I'm doing in Adobe Illustrator, that just uses a bit too much RAM, and it just freaks out a little bit. So it goes a little bit slower. It's not super noticeable, but because I use it at full speed all the time, I notice that it's a little bit off. But with that laptop, it's really powerful. It was about the same price as a baseline MacBook, but it has a lot better specs. And Razer have made and continue to make really great gaming products as well. Now, I don't use this machine typically for gaming, but I know that it would quite happily run some of the most recent AAA titles with ease. So that's why I use a Razer instead of a MacBook. It was also considerably cheaper. And then my main desktop machine, which at the moment is not even plugged into the internet because I haven't quite, because I forgot to, when I bought this desktop PC years ago, I didn't get a Wi-Fi card in it. I was like, nah, I don't need to pay an extra 15 quid. I'll just use an Ethernet cable. But now I've moved rooms in the house to where the computer sits. So now the Ethernet cable wouldn't be, I couldn't run it to the box. So I'd have to, I've got to go and get a Wi-Fi adapter for it at some point, or use something like that. But the custom PC I have, the graphics card in it is not super great at the moment. It's quite an old one. It's like an Nvidia GTX 700 series. So it's quite an old graphics card really at this point. But the thing that it makes up for in is I have a ton of hard drives in there and I have 32 gigabytes of RAM in it because I just upgraded that as far as it could take. I could go to 64, but there's no point. But it runs so well and I cannot complain about that PC at all. The only time I've ever had problems with a custom PC, with my custom PC, is when some of my hard drives kind of had a poop and just failed. But other than that, it's been perfectly fine and will continue to be probably for many years to come, which is one of the reasons I got a custom PC for, which had, again, at the time I bought it, which would be, well, I didn't, I partially bought it, didn't I? Yeah, I got a part of it as a gift and part of it I bought. But the reason I got that instead of going for a MacBook or an iMac was because I could, again, get almost twice the spec for the same price in a custom PC in comparison to a MacBook or an iMac. And it just didn't seem logical, especially with what I wanted to do, because at the time I was doing lots of gaming and designing, but now I'm doing a lot less gaming. So that side of it's not so important, but having the ability to have multiple Adobe programs open at once. So with 32 gigs of RAM, I've got Photoshop open, I've got Illustrator open, I've got Premiere open, I'm just going nuts. And it works perfectly fine. And then that leads on to the next bit, which is, well, Connie, you've got two computers set up on this desktop. How does that work when you're actually working and using them? Well, I use, obviously I've mentioned I use external hard drives and SyncToy to get data between the two, but I also have a HD smart switcher, which is basically just a box that has three HDMI inputs and one HDMI output. You plug the output into your external monitor, and then you just press a button and it just switches between sources. So I used to have this set up with my desktop PC and my Wii U, the games console, the Wii U, because what I would do was I'd be doing design work and be like, oh, I want to just play some games, but like I don't want to have to go and sit in the living room to play them and plug the Wii U in and do all of that. If I just buy a HDMI switcher, I can push one button and then we're playing Smash Bros. Or something like that instead. But now what I use it for is switching between my laptop and switching between my main desktop, which is great at the moment. It's not a finished fix, but that's what I use to kind of move things around. And I'll also be getting a USB smart switcher in the future too, because then it means I can not just swap between screens, but I can also swap which computer my mouse, my USB mouse and my keyboard is attached to as well, which is kind of a strange setup to think about. I've got two computers sat on one desk. Like, Connor, why don't you just do something a certain way and just have one thing for everything? It's like, well, yeah, you're right. I should probably do that eventually. But for now, I like having the portability of the laptop, and I also like having the laptop plugged in for certain things. And obviously it works for the internet right now, and when I can splash out or when I can spend or be bothered to spend the 20 quid to go and get that Wi-Fi card to plug into it, then we'll do that and see how it goes. But the last couple of things we'll talk about is the podcast. Now, there are multiple different videos out there about how to set up a podcast, how to do this, how to do that. And for the longest time, I was using a Blue Yeti USB microphone. But the issue I found with the USB microphone is the quality was never that good. Didn't matter how many times I adjusted the settings, didn't matter how many times I changed the USB cable, because it was all just coming in through USB directly rather than going through like a condenser and a mixer, the sound was just never that good. But for the majority of stuff, and probably for a podcast, it should be fine. But I upgraded based on some recommendations I had to an Audio-Technica AT2020, which is a condenser microphone, which is then plugged into a mixer. So I have a physical mixer on my table, which has about 4 or 5 different input settings. Obviously, I only need the one or maybe two at most. But having this mixer, which I've had basically for 10 years since I was doing 10 years? No, that's not true. It's for like 5 or 6 years since I was doing live music and electronic music related stuff. I have this mixer and it's really powerful, but it allows me to have a condenser microphone. So rather than using just a typical USB microphone that plugs straight into your computer, it's a condenser microphone. So it plugs into the mixer first, like a traditional stage microphone would, and then it goes via USB from the mixer to my laptop, which is a much cleaner sound, is a much less noise around it, and the sound is much crisper. And I can edit it either live on the mixer, I can adjust the EQ on the mixer, or I can do it in Audition later. And because the sound's so much cleaner, I don't have to worry about anything distorting or anything like that. When it comes to editing my podcast, I use Adobe Audition, or sometimes if I'm just on the road or needing to do things a little bit quicker, I will use Audacity. And Audacity is just a free version of Adobe Audition with far less features. But many people still, even some of the most prolific people who have amazingly massive podcasts, still just use Audacity and just edit it themselves, which is perfectly fine. Audacity is doable. I just like the recording and the effects on Audition. But at some point, I'm probably leaving Adobe softwares and going elsewhere. So I'll have to figure out what I'm going to do next after that. And then to schedule and publish podcasts, I use a tool called Anchor. Anchor.fm, I think, is their domain, their website. And Anchor, basically, if you get the app either on desktop or on your phone, you can use it to record, edit, and schedule and publish podcasts. I personally don't use it to record podcasts because I like using Adobe Audition, or I like using Audacity, which has a little bit more control over it. And then I just use it to schedule it and publish it. And Anchor distributes it everywhere. Anchor distributes it to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, obviously Anchor, their own site, which is fine. I think most people listen to it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Apple Podcasts, however, which is fine. But Anchor is a great way to make a podcast and schedule it and get it done, and it's completely free. I don't pay anything for Anchor, which is great. Obviously, sometimes you don't get as good stats as you would with, say, a paid for platform. But at the moment I'm at, with how much it costs to do everything else that I do, and the fact that the podcast doesn't make consistent money, sometimes someone will sign up for Skillshare, which, by the way, we'll get onto in a minute. But other than that, it doesn't actually have any major sponsors with stuff coming in every week. So until it's self-sustaining, until the podcast is self-sustaining, I just like using Anchor, and it's also super easy and intuitive to use. So that's what I use for the podcast, if you were wondering. And then finally, to wrap up, people ask all the time, where do I go to learn things? How do I become self-taught, so to speak? Where did I start? Well, I mainly started by just pushing software around and pushing buttons. But when I'd graduated away from just being like a monkey with a keyboard and actually wanted to learn about specific topics, I would look at things on YouTube, which is where I discovered The Future, which is a channel, obviously, I would recommend all of you go and subscribe to and watch on a regular basis, or even go back through their archives and look at the content they've made in the past over the last, I think, 3 or 4 years, because some of it is insanely incredible and heavily, heavily underwatched. And then other than that, on YouTube, I don't really follow any other design channels on YouTube. I've found a few in the past, but I've either really not liked the host, or they've just not been consistent with the quality, whereas The Future has literally been consistent with quality since day one, especially with Even with Jose and Chris both doing the show since the very early videos, and then obviously Chris and the team at the future now doing things without Jose, although Jose might be coming back anyway. The stuff they have put out has always been consistently good and has only improved over time, whereas some of these other channels I've found have just not been quite to my taste. So I'd always just recommend the future. But then on top of that, I'd recommend Skillshare. And you guys can go to skl.sh/cvalordesign or click the link in the description for 2 free months of Skillshare. And that is, yes, a shameless plug. But Skillshare's fab. I've watched courses from Gary Vee. I've watched courses from Aaron Draplin. I've even learned how to use Adobe InDesign through an Adobe certified instructor on Skillshare. So you could go to a university and learn InDesign as part of your graphic design course, or you could get my 2 free months and learn how to use InDesign in 2 months, or even less than that. I think I learned how to use InDesign in 1.5, 2 weeks, just from watching stuff in my spare time. And it allowed me to have a new skill set for a creative subject in a software that I didn't know stupidly quickly. And there were exercises, there were tasks, there were little workshop things and homework to do as well that you could do. And it just made the whole thing a lot easier and a lot more fun and engaging, because I could do things at my own pace, whether that was quickly, whether that was slowly. I could go back through stuff. I could ask as many questions as I wanted if I really wanted to put them down in the comments of that video. But more often than not, the fact you can just go back and rewatch things, the fact everything is labeled so clearly, you're not going to lose bits of paper, it's all in your account. It makes a massive difference, because I can access Skillshare from my phone. I can access Skillshare from anywhere in the world where there's internet. And all you have to do, I think it's something like 80 quid a year, which is stupidly cheap for the amount of free, well, when you pay for it, obviously, the amount of courses on there that you can learn from, and you can learn incredible skills from, especially when it comes to software, but also when it comes down to business mindset, social media, and all the other stuff I've talked about in every single podcast about Skillshare. The platform, since I first used it, has grown so much. And they've clearly invested a lot of time into getting instructors on board who know their shit, because I've used them time and time again. And yeah, honestly, Skillshare is probably, I don't want to say the best online learning platform for design, because I think the guys at the future, I think what Chris is making, I think all the courses they're making as well are really well worth the money. But if you don't have the funds, for example, to purchase a course from the future, I would start by going to Skillshare, get those 2 free months, see what you think of the platform, rinse Skillshare completely dry of everything that you'd want to know, and then continue from there. But then the physical stuff comes in, because I've just mentioned two sources online, but you can learn so much from books as well. And you can very easily, Chris Doe has published a book list maybe every 6 months about what he reads and what he suggests you read. But just sitting down and reading a book and following some very simple rules when reading books about comprehension and making sure you're paying attention can really help you improve your skill set, and for very cheap as well. So, for example, the book I'm reading literally right now, obviously not right now recording, but the book I'm reading at the moment is called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, from the New York Times bestselling author David Allen. Now, as I said, I'm a little obsessed with productivity, so this is kind of not a surprising read for me, but it might be it might be not the type of thing you would read. But this book normally costs £15, which is about it's probably more like $15, maybe $18, but I just bought it secondhand. I just bought this book secondhand for, I think, £6, so like $6 or $7. And it's in perfectly great nick. It doesn't really feel used in any capacity. And now I've got my own copy of this book for stupidly cheap money, and I can refer to it whenever I want. It's on my shelf. It's 300 pages of someone's writing that they've spent years and years perfecting and figuring out, and I have it in my hand for £6. So it seems foolish to not get loads of books. Obviously, you don't want to fill up your entire house with books. But when you can, I'd always recommend getting a physical copy of a book rather than getting it on Kindle, or rather than just doing their course version online. Get the physical book, because when you sit down and you focus on it, it's much easier to absorb that information. I think audiobooks are probably pretty good too, but audiobooks, particularly for design-related stuff, you might struggle with. You might be better off getting the physical book so you can actually see images, you can see comparisons, and all that type of stuff as well. And that's it. That kind of brings us to the end of the show. So, as I said, I will put the vast majority of this stuff down in the description as what I can, especially to linking to those apps and different tools that I use, but or maybe my laptop as well, if you guys are interested in that kind of thing. But overall, these are the kind of things that I use on a daily and weekly basis or have running all the time in the background, like Rescue Time or Backblaze. They're just going. And it's taken a long, long time for me to figure this stuff out, to find these tools and to get them to a point where I can actually use them. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode and kind of walk you through the stuff that I use is maybe you can take some of this away and use it for yourself. Maybe something I've said has turned you off and you won't want, maybe it's just not for you. And that's fine too. But by sitting and sharing this information with you, hopefully you've got something valuable out of it. And hopefully you can take this away and say, okay, well, Connor has spent probably the best part of 4 years trying to figure this out and is constantly looking to update and improve and change things. So maybe there's something in here I could use too, and it saved you some time. Because that's what these kind of podcasts are for. Like, I like recording these solo episodes to help you guys save time. So I share stuff that I know about. I share cool things that I found. I share interesting conversations or questions or thought exercises as kind of the stuff I'm thinking in the future. But whatever I share on these solo episodes, I just want it to be valuable to help you guys save time or to solve problems faster, which again is saving time. Because it's not just because I'm a bit of a productivity obsessed person, but I appreciate efficiency and I appreciate the ability to be efficient and creative. Because when you're more efficient with tasks that aren't creative, so for example, editing this podcast is not going to be a creative task, but I know that I can do it in about an hour now rather than 2 hours because of some stuff I've learned. When you and someone has taught me, when I've got that stuff in mind, it saves me time so I can be more creative later, which is kind of one of the biggest blessings, because the sooner and faster you can get over the admin, the non-creative, the more businessy, boring stuff, the more time you have to be creative and more time you have to problem solve and the more time you have to design. So hopefully this episode has helped you think of some new things or even immediately found a solution to a problem you were having. And if you were having any problems or ideas, please let me know down in the comments. I'd love to hear any tools you'd recommend down in the comments. Who are you? This is a podcast, Connor. Send me a tweet. Send me a tweet with hashtag Fowler Hour or at C Fowler Design, or send me a DM on Instagram. Don't leave a comment. You can't do that. But leave us a review on iTunes, however, and leave us 5 stars and I'll read it out on the next episode. I'd really appreciate that. But. Whatever happens after you've listened to this episode, I hope you found some of it useful. And thank you to Skillshare for sponsoring. You can go to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign to get 2 free months of Skillshare. As I mentioned, probably the best learning platform out there that you can access anywhere you go. So go and get that. Go and get it now, because I pretty much only put it on my podcast and in my newsletter for the people who really want to listen to the end of the show. So thank you very much for listening to the end of the show. And yeah, send us a message with what you found, or send us a message with something different that you use. If you're into productivity stuff, if you're into different apps, send me those as well, because I'm a little obsessed with it. But either way, I hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you guys same time next week on the Fowler Hour. Bye for now.